Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 27th of April, 2015, the podcast that takes what it dishes out. This is your host, Shane Killian, and now, after 8 long months, he's back, he's bad, he's Lord T-Hawkeye himself, Tim Dyson. Tim, great to have you back on the podcast.
Hey, everybody. Thousand apologies for the absence, but I'll be here more often now.
So what you been up to all this time?
Oh, writing my comic and getting exhausted at work, mostly.
That's the thing about being a writer. You got to keep the day job going, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's countermand the news of the bogus. You may recall that Dr. Mehmet Oz was our idiot of the year for 2014. Now, some emails that were obtained during the Sony hack last year and published by WikiLeaks show the inner workings of how he gets the recommendations for his show, and it's not pretty.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and of course, lots of people watch his show because he's giving them all this advice on what kind of health products and devices that they should use. And of course, he's a good-looking guy on TV with the word doctor in front of his name. So that must mean that he is giving you proper information based on the data and on the science and how healthy these things have actually been shown for you. Well, not really. It has a lot more to do with business considerations and what's going to keep his producers happy. One of the producers, of course, is Sony. And when the Sony hack happened, all those emails were released, and a lot of them were between Dr. Oz and his staff and executives at Sony. So, for example, there's one that goes to the CEO of Sony Entertainment, Michael Lenton, quote, "I have been carefully following the wearable device market and am pretty close to consummating a longer-term relationship, but just saw this piece below, quoting Haz Hirai, the president and CEO of Sony, and realized that Sony is moving into the space as well. We should leverage the Sony-driven success of our TV show into other arenas where Sony thrives, like health hardware." Yeah, so this doesn't have anything to do with health considerations or, you know, how good it is for you or how good it is, because I think they're making things that have heart monitors and things like that. Nope, it's about how can we help Sony be successful with their product.
What really bugs me about this is that he is actually a doctor, which is just going to give the anti-big pharma people just more fuel for the fire. Say, see, profit corrupts some doctors or whatever. Even though I bet you if you kept digging through this, you're going to find subsidies from politicians in this equation somewhere. I mean, you really couldn't get away with this in a free market where people can check this out and all that.
Oh, there was all sorts of stuff in the Sony emails about subsidies and relationships with politicians and stuff like that. But
Here it comes.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they've always had the big lobbying group, especially for copyrights and things like that. We've covered stuff like that. But, you know, Sony does make really good hardware, and I'm really hoping that these wearables they're coming out with do end up being good and do end up being of great benefit for a lot of people. But I'm not going to take Dr. Oz's word on whether or not they are.
Yeah, because Sony's good with electronics. They're not doctors, and they really shouldn't be having a say in what goes on a doctoring show like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a huge conflict of interest. You know, if Sony produces his show and he's on there hawking Sony products, well... So you also have Keith Weaver, Executive Vice President for Worldwide Government Affairs at Sony, who wrote, quote, "Dr. Oz has not entered into a paid sponsorship agreement to date, but would like to explore doing so in the future. We have apprised the appropriate parties of the risks associated with the future plans, as well as specific criticisms of Dr. Oz's role in the national conversation about health that could emerge in the hearing or in subsequent coverage." And he was talking about that hearing we covered when Dr. Oz was before the Senate Commerce Subcommittee. But all this is about, well, we don't want to make it appear as though there's anything going wrong here, as opposed to there actually is nothing going wrong here. And, I mean, you also have the model followed by people like Consumer Reports. I know the Twit Network, This Week in Tech, does this. They just refuse to take sponsorship deals from any of the companies whose products they review, not even advertising dollars or anything like that. And I think the Twit people won't even accept the freebies that the company sends out. They'll actually go and buy it and test it just so there won't be any possibility of anything like that going on. But not Dr. Oz.
Oh, yeah. It's become common practice after the whole Gamergate thing. People are now saying, here's where my money's coming from, who's sponsoring me, so this may taint my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't think Dr. Oz is going to be putting any of these kind of disclaimers on his show.
Well, and even if it is, it's probably like that John Edward kind of disclaimer. This is for entertainment purposes only. And then, you know, you give one little disclaimer saying this isn't real, and then 50 other times during the episode you say it's real. Yeah. And this Vox article talks about another of their producers, Harpo, who was talking about the hearing again, wondering about whether he should actually appear because of the potential negative public relations fallout, quote, "It is also worth noticing for the record that Harpo's counsel is not in favor of Oz participating, especially when he's not legally obligated to do so. They do not see the value of getting involved unless compelled by subpoena, because there's always the potential for downside, no matter how slight." And then you also had Sheraton Kaluria, chief marketing officer at Sony, quote, "We feel we should not give the media who looks at Oz like a snake oil salesman right now any fodder to further this perception."
Well, if the shoe fits, wear it.
Yeah, we don't actually want him going out there where he can actually answer questions, where he might have to tell the truth and things like that.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned, the psychics there. They'll never go for an interview with someone who's going to ask him the hard questions.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I do want to say I'm not picking on Dr. Oz, because I've seen some other medical shows on there that are kind of like that. There's this one called The Doctors, where apparently everyone up there is an actual doctor, but they always have this segment where they hawk the products that you can buy and things like that.
Yeah, people always in life try to sell you things, but you always got to be skeptical about it, people. Always be sure to follow the money and see, does this person have an incentive to lie to me, or does he have an incentive to be honest and upfront?
Or even just, do they have any personal bias? And meanwhile, another leak, this time of the private group Naturopathic Chat on Yahoo, has revelations of its own. And this is from Stephen Novella of the Neurologica blog. And he talks about what's going on in these conversations that were leaked. He said, quote, "Naturopaths are requesting and have been granted in many states the privilege to be healthcare providers, and claim as part of their request for such privileges that their practices are scientifically valid. Their beliefs in healthcare practices are therefore very much a matter of important public interest. Their training is mostly in pseudoscientific nonsense, and it does not prepare them to be science-based healthcare practitioners. They have brought this issue to the public domain, and therefore it should be public and transparent. In my opinion, naturopaths try to put their best foot forward when talking to academics and politicians, and are coy and evasive when it comes to the depth of the pseudoscience at the core of the beliefs and practices. Hearing them talk in an unguarded environment, therefore, is very enlightening."
Well, what do you expect? When you're selling voodoo, you don't want the scientists around.
Yeah. Well, and most of this is stuff we already knew, like how much weight they place on anecdotal evidence, you know, N equals one.
Which means nothing. I mean, I can find you people who will swear to you with tears in their eyes that faith healing works. That doesn't prove anything.
Well, look at how many people claim to have been abducted by aliens and how much their stories agree with each other.
And they usually start with, "We were drinking one day."
I don't think all of it, but yeah. And he also talks about how many of the naturopaths in the discussion group believe they're being completely scientific in their approach. They just don't understand why what they're doing is wrong. And he also says, quote, "They grossly overestimate the degree to which basic science knowledge can predict that a treatment will work," you know, as opposed to proper clinical trials.
They don't see the harm in it? There's a whole website devoted to telling exactly what's the harm in it. Take a look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they don't really have any excuse, but it's just, you know, I guess if you live in your echo chamber.
It's like an interesting thing I once heard. You always know it's nonsense when they have to add an extra word to it. Like, there's no such thing as natural medicine. There's just medicine.
Yeah. Alternative medicine. And it's like the old joke, what do you call alternative medicine that works? Medicine!
Exactly.
So he says, quote, "Naturopaths go beyond looking at individual therapeutic targets and tend to make wild speculations that involve many links in an increasingly unlikely chain. This would not be a problem if all they were doing is spitballing for new potential research projects rather than using their speculations as the actual basis for treatments."
In other words, making it all up.
Yeah, we'll make up what sounds good and then just go with that.
Yeah, like, isn't that what doctors did when medicine was way in its infancy? I mean, isn't the whole idea was we develop to the point we don't have to do that anymore?
Yeah. And he also points out that another connecting thread in all these discussions is that, quote, naturopathy is heavily philosophy-based rather than science-based. And I guess there's nothing wrong with being philosophy-based, but if you're doing something scientific, you need the science as well as the philosophy.
Yeah, that's not what philosophy is for, people.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine to have a philosophy, just make sure you're consistent with the science. So he gives some examples. Here's one naturopath writing on vaccines, quote, I said forced vaccinations are the most important civil liberties issue of our age, you know, as opposed to NSA spying, drone strikes, things like that. Not the most important issue. I did not compare it to racism, poverty, homelessness, because it is a forcible assault on innocence. In fact, on the majority of children, attempted on all children, it is arguably the most important civil liberties issue of our age. If you cannot control or prevent what others choose to insert into your body, how is that substantially different than rape? Without emotional rants, please compare the legal definition of rape to the mechanism of vaccine administration against the recipient's will and to the unsuccessful prevention of penetration of one's own body by another person or by an instrument used by another person.
Sargon's Law. Where do I even start here?
So what do you mean by Sargon's Law?
It's a new thing going on. A YouTuber by the name of Sargon of Akkad came up with it. Whenever an ideologue makes a moral judgment, that moral judgment inevitably applies to them. Because he's talking about it's a forcible assault on innocence, putting things in other people's body they don't want. What exactly do you call spreading preventable diseases to other people? If you don't get yourself vaccinated and you spread a disease to another person, that is exactly what you are doing here, sir.
Absolutely, and by spreading out all this misinformation about vaccines, you're causing other people to make that decision as well, and then you get measles in Disneyland.
Yeah, if you want to make the rape comparison, well, if you have sex with someone under false pretenses that they would not have agreed to if they knew the truth, isn't that also considered it?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Exact same thing. You spread misinformation, you make people make decisions that they would not have made had they been fully aware of the facts. So, yeah, I'd say your moral argument applies exactly to you much more, sir, and not to the people trying to prevent illness. Unbelievable.
Well, and also, we see this kind of tactic from anti-vaxxers all the time, talking about going against forced vaccinations. I think you and I, as libertarians, would be shouting as loud as anyone else if they were actually going into people's homes, holding them down, and sticking them with needles. But that's not what's happening. There is no forced vaccination.
No, it's just some organizations saying, yeah, if you don't vaccinate your kids, they're not welcome here because we don't want an epidemic on our hands.
Right.
It's simply stating the conditions upon which they are willing to do business with you. That is not force. I don't know where people get this idea that that's force. I'm sorry, it isn't.
And schools have a vested interest in the health of their students. So, of course, they're going to be, I mean, it's not like they're saying, oh, well, they're government schools. Well, private schools do it, too. Daycares do it. You know, when I send my kids to day camp at the YMCA, they want their shot records.
Yeah, they don't want their business getting closed down because there was an outbreak.
Yeah. And so this is pretty scary. This one's writing about Ebola. Quote, so I put up a website this weekend, Bare Bones, where one can download a PDF with all research summaries of what I found and possible treatment strategies. Inhibition of cytokine storm also has more immediate relevancy in case a virulent strain of avian flu begins to circulate. I am charging $7 a copy as I have put almost 150 hours into this over the 2 months and incurred expenses setting up the website. And basically, as Novella points out, he just basically did a PubMed search and looked for things where he could just speculate about so-called natural therapies.
Yeah, people are trying to find real cures, and we keep having to waste time and resources on fending off all this nonsense.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, suppose there is an Ebola outbreak in the U.S. or Canada or somewhere, and people are reading this stuff, and they say, oh, well, all I have to do is, you know, take this naturopathic stuff, and I won't get Ebola, and then they don't take other precautions. And then when
it inevitably happens, they can just say, oh, you didn't do it right, and boom, they're off the hook.
Oh, yeah.
Always beware someone who sets up the argument so they can't possibly be wrong.
And he talks about NDs, naturopathic doctors, basically posing as primary care physicians, but they're talking about when do you refer someone? And this is pretty scary. Listen to this. Quote, I have a patient who I am concerned has leukemia. I have never made this diagnosis before and am looking for guidance. This patient is uninsured and not interested in seeing an MD unless absolutely necessary.
Oh my God.
Jeez, if you think someone has leukemia, nothing else matters. Refer him to an oncologist.
Why would this even be a decision?
It shouldn't even be a question.
Yeah, that's dangerous, and if you don't catch it early, it could kill him. Yeah, if you have any concern whatsoever they may have leukemia, you should send him to a doctor. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, he talks about him being uninsured, but if he doesn't do anything, and later on it turns out he does have leukemia, he's in for much bigger expenses than he would be if they'd caught it early.
If not the ultimate expense.
True. Well, here's what one reply said, quote, I find I hesitate to call in cases like this because it feels like asking favors from a busy and reputable stranger. On another note, I would hold off adding folate until cancer is ruled out. Also, hematologic cancers are different than solid tumor cancers in many ways, and certain supplements should be avoided, melatonin, etc. I would also refer to oncologist in this case, but with the understanding that the referral is only for information gathering and nothing more. Good luck. And Novella asks, was that good luck for the ND or the patient?
I mean, I'm not an expert on medicine, but even I can read this and think, I do not get a sense this person has any idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and he does know what he's talking about with medicine, and he points out that even for just a regular physician, to not refer a case like that to an oncologist is malpractice.
Yeah, but then they get to hide behind the, oh, it's not official medicine, so I can't be guilty of malpractice. Yeah. They like to jump back and forth between the two pedestals.
Yeah. And here's one where an ND actually recommends using a Rife machine, which is this weird thing that dates back about 100 years, and it's like all of these metal tubes and wires that go around your body, and it's basically like sticking yourself with a bunch of 9-volt batteries. It basically does nothing, except that some of them, they actually up the voltage on, and as the result, several people have died from these machines, but they don't have any medical uses, and they were discarded like 70 or 80 years ago as having, you know, any valid diagnostic or therapeutic value at all. But he's recommending it for chronic Lyme disease, which is something else that doesn't exist. And what he said is, quote, I treated chronic Lyme disease for several years and will have to say that I was very impressed by the Rife machine. I used it on every patient and saw exactly what I would expect with a therapy that kills the bugs. Herx following use of Rife sometimes quite dramatic, with a resolution within 2 to 5 days depending on the patient. I cycled through 4 different sets of frequencies focusing on different aspects, blah blah blah. Okay, did you spot the problems? He used it on every patient and saw exactly what he would expect.
What does that mean? Those aren't proper numbers.
I mean, it's not like he tried it on some patients and not others, and it worked better on the patients he did it with, although that would still be invalid because it wasn't double-blinded or anything. But he doesn't have anything to compare it to.
Exactly.
And it's what he would expect. Well, gee.
Well, we don't even know what that is. Were you expecting half cured, some cured, almost? That doesn't tell us anything.
Well, he says, like, sometimes and within 2 to 5 days. And I mean, I don't know much about Lyme disease and how long it actually takes for your body to kick it out. But, you know, your body can kick out most of the diseases in like a couple of weeks. So if they've had it for a week and then he goes on this and it's gone within 2 to 5 days, well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the rain dance effect.
You keep dancing, eventually it rains. Say, ha ha, see?
And as for the Rife machine, science changes pretty rapidly, so always be aware of cures that have remained unchanged for long periods of time.
Exactly.
As Penn Jillette once said, if your doctor told you he was going to cure your cancer with the same techniques used 50 years ago, you'd scream and run.
Uh-huh. Now, in fairness, there were some naturopaths that did say that the Rife machine was, quote, pure fantasy, but as Novella points out, all that means is there's just a lack of consistent standards there. And again, I mean, this is nothing new. This is nothing we didn't already know. But to see them discuss stuff like this openly, that's pretty telling.
It's like a bunch of 5-year-olds talking about politics. They have no clue what they're talking. They just like, yeah, this would be very adorable if they weren't actually trying to put it into practice.
Yeah. But I think a bigger lesson here with both of these stories is fraud and quackery are everywhere. And we learned all this through leaks. Leaks and whistleblowers are a very important part of the process in exposing them.
And of course, the other question is, where's the government who's supposed to protect us from this? I mean, I get this argument all the time from people. But if we didn't have government, quacks could practice without any problems. What do you call this? You have a government.
Well, they actually have the law that says that these people can just put their medicine on store shelves, bypass all of the FDA requirements for all the testing and everything, as long as they call it a supplement and put that little disclaimer on there, you know, these statements have not been endorsed by the FDA or whatever, however it goes.
And meanwhile, real medicine is taking 20 years to get approved.
Yeah, and close to $1 billion.
Yeah, so apparently working within the law is for suckers. That's the message we're getting here.
Yeah. Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide the means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. I'll be honest, I don't really know anything about Sarah Silverman as a comedian. I just know that every time I've seen her name mentioned in the press, it's for some sort of idiocy or other. So apparently, she told this story about how women are discriminated against by being paid less for the same job. Quote, "I was out with my friend Todd Berry, and we were doing sets around town together, and I was pretty well known already, and we both did back-to-back 15-minute sets at this club, the New York Comedy Club, and he paid me $10. And we were outside talking, and Todd somehow brought up that he, you know, mentioned that he got $60. So I went back inside and I asked the owner, Al Martin, and I said, Al, why did you pay me $10 and you paid Todd Berry $60? And he, it was so perfect, and she laughs, he goes, oh, did you want a $60 spot? It was symbolic, I didn't need $60, but, you know, it was pretty shitty. There's just one tiny problem with this story. It never happened. She made the whole thing up, and she's now even admitted it was all a lie.
Yeah, people, she's a comedian. That should have been your first clue. Not all their stories are true.
But the thing is, she's still saying that people that criticize her for telling the story are sexist.
Of course.
But Martin talked with PJ Media and said that Berry had booked the set, and he was being paid $60 as part of the booking. Silverman's was a last-minute guest spot, and guest spots are unpaid regardless of gender. And he let her have that guest spot as a favor, and he gave her $10 for cab fare just to be nice. So he didn't pay her any less than he would have paid a man to do the same thing, because either way, they wouldn't have been paid at all. And he decided to be nice and give her some cab fare, and then look what happened.
You always get these. They always have to pick and choose like this. Like Emma Watson whining that she was paid less than, what's his name?
Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe. Of course you're paid less. He's playing the principal role. You're playing a secondary role.
Yeah.
In fact, she was paid more than the guy who played Ron Weasley.
Yeah. You're not paid as much as the titular character whom everything's set around.
This whole women get paid less thing, it's just like a zombie you can't nuke from orbit. It just won't die.
Mm. So anyway, when she talked to Solange, she admitted she made the whole thing up. And she issued kind of a pseudo-apology, quote, "My regret is that I mentioned Al by name. It should have been a nameless, faceless anecdote, and he has always been lovely to me." In other words, she regrets that she said anything specific that could be verified, and she should have kept it vague so no one could tell whether or not she was telling the truth.
Of course.
But she went on to say that people who might see an advocate having lied about something like this as a reason to question the message of that movement were maniacs. That was her word, maniacs.
It's not so much that she told a story like this. It's the fact that stories like this get held up as evidence for their side.
Well, and she tried to distance herself from it by saying, quote, This is also hardly an example of the wage gap, and can only do that very true reality a terrible disservice if I were trying to make it one. Well, I mean, she was complaining about not being paid the same much as a man. How was she not doing that?
Exactly.
To the maniacs who want to use this against women's issues, I ask you please don't, because that would be super shitty. Okay, we won't. Believe me, we've got way better evidence than this.
That's true, yeah.
Whenever people bring up these supposed inequality, just ask the inevitable question. If you can pay women less for the exact same work, why isn't there some big entrepreneur coming in, hiring only women, and making an absolute killing?
Yep.
Why do capitalists suddenly stop caring about profits when it's convenient to the argument? This is something I have challenged people for years to answer, and they won't.
Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. So here's another thing we've covered many times, which is one of the most visible facts throughout history that still causes so many people so much indignation whenever it's pointed out. Teenagers are sexual creatures.
No.
Ooh. What?
Yeah?
You're kidding me, man.
Believe it or not. For that matter, children are sexual creatures, too. They've caught babies in the womb through ultrasound masturbating. Babies in the womb. Both sexes masturbate. It's how humans are. It's how we're wired together.
Some of these people, you wonder, do you not remember as a kid? I mean, come on. Let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't come as any surprise to anyone with more than two brain cells to knock together that children are going to engage in things like sexting in this day and age, just like they played doctor in days gone by. And yet, officials are hitting the roof about the whole thing and trampling all over our rights in the name of stopping it, something they have no hope of doing ever. And this story is about Missouri law enforcement serving cloud storage site Dropbox with a search warrant because they're looking for pictures belonging to teens suspected of sexting.
I mean, is there any way to make it not sound like the cops just want to get a look at it themselves?
Yeah, they got to add it to their collection.
I'd hate to think that, but there's no way to twist this otherwise.
Yeah, and so this happened at Joplin High School in Missouri. School officials heard rumors. Okay, rumors, made up tales that students were sharing nude photos via their phones and putting them on Dropbox.
Because teenage rumors are always known for being truthful.
Well, according to the local news station KY3, the cops interviewed a lot of the students and even seized some of their cell phones. And what did they find? Nothing! No sex pics at all.
Case closed, right?
Well, apparently that's not what that means. What that means is we need just a little more privacy infringement. If we get into their Dropbox files, we're sure to come up with a motherlode, right? The KY3 reports, quote, "No arrests have been made, but the cybercrime task force based in Joplin is only beginning their investigation. Police are sending a search warrant to Dropbox so they can stop further access to the images and determine whether any minor students are indeed depicted in the photos. If so, the parents of all involved will be notified, and a prosecutor will determine if any child porn laws have been violated." Now, the reason, we've covered this before, the reason for child porn laws was that back in the day, about the only way you could get nude pictures of children and video of children having sex and things like that was for adults to do it. And there are really scary stories about what a lot of these kids were put through. Going through a process they call grooming to kind of get them ready to have sex, you know, when it's something that's not their idea. That's bad. That's something we should actually go against, but that's not this. These are teenagers expressing their own sexuality, which technology is now allowing them to do.
Exactly.
if you think of it, all they're doing is letting each other see stuff like that. I mean, it's no different than, it's like arresting people because you and your sister saw each other naked when you were 3 years old or something. I mean, how far are you going to take this?
But I mean, you know, it's not just this one story. We've covered story after story after story like this. Teenage girl takes a nude photo of herself, sends it to someone. She's charged with producing and distributing child porn. You know, two teenagers have sex with each other. They're both charged with statutory rape of sleeping with a minor when each one slept with each other and they were both minors, and jeez.
When you make laws like this, these people are saying your body belongs to the state. You may not use it in a way that the state does not approve of. I mean, have we completely lost our capacity for moral outrage to find that incredibly insulting? I mean, I certainly do.
But Tim, we have to protect the children.
Yeah, exactly. From the law enforcement who apparently have nothing better to do with their time.
Well, and what about the school officials calling law enforcement? I mean, at my school, we all weren't exactly angels. There were plenty of people who did far worse than this. And they didn't get the cops involved. They called the parents, and then the parents grabbed them, took them home, and took care of things.
Exactly.
Why are they just, well, it's like minor little infractions, and they're calling the cops.
I mean, is call the cops just going to be the go-to solution for everything these days? Is everyone just going to call the cops when every time they stub their foot at this rate? Unbelievable.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now let's unskew the statistics of this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to Mark Hertzgard of the Daily Beast, as well as writers for the Sacramento Bee, New York Times, and ABC News, all of whom are trying to defend California's statewide water restrictions by claiming, falsely, that farmers use 80% of California's water.
Like, already right off the bat, that sounds ridiculously inflated.
And this comes on the heels of Governor Jerry Brown announcing these statewide water restrictions, because there's this drought and we're having to deal with these drought conditions. What was that Milton Friedman said? If you put government in charge of the Sahara Desert, within 5 years you get a shortage of sand.
Yeah, I've watched a bit about this before. Oh, it's been pointed out part of the reason is because they won't build reservoirs because the environmentalists are going to get their panties in a twist about it. They can't build pipelines from the reservoirs they have because the environmentalists are going to get their panties in a twist about it. Like, why are we so afraid of offending environmentalists? What's the last thing they've done for you these days?
Yeah, so Hertzgard wrote, quote, "Agriculture consumes a staggering 80% of California's developed water, even as it accounts for only 2% of the state's gross domestic product." And then an ABC News article said, quote, "California agriculture, largely spared in new water restrictions, wields huge clout." And in the New York Times, quote, "The state signaled that it was also about to further restrict water supplies to the agriculture industry, which consumes 80% of the water used in the state." Does it sound kind of like they're trying to make them a scapegoat to point to?
Government's making someone a scapegoat? No.
Here's the fact. 50% of the water captured by the state's dams, reservoirs, aqueducts, and other infrastructure is diverted for environmental causes.
Yes.
Farmers use 40% of the water supply. The way they get that 80% is that they take out the 50% used for environmental purposes, and of the 50% that's left, 80% is used by farmers, so 40% all total.
It's like people who argue that tax stuff is free because they just don't count taxes as an expense.
Yeah.
Like, if government ended, the tax money would just cease to exist. Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
But at least the environmentalists are doing helpful things with the water, right?
Yeah, the Endangered Species Act spawned many of these regulations, such as rules that divert usable water to protect baby salmon and a 3-inch bait fish called the Delta Smelt, as well as rules that protect the striped bass, a non-native fish that, ironically, eats both baby salmon and smelt.
Yeah, and wasn't there something about trying to preserve some wetlands that ultimately didn't need the help or something like that?
But, I mean, they're making all this big deal about 80% of the water used by farmers. They're not at all mentioning the water used for environmental purposes, which outstrips it. And even President Obama, in a speech about climate change, pointed out how this is a huge problem, but did he mention the environmental regulations? Did he mention all the water that was wasting?
No, of course not. Environmentalists can do no wrong. I'm sure the people who write this tell themselves that, oh, the water the environmentalists use is used for a good cause, it's not being wasted. Anyone who thinks the government is ideal for solving environmental issues, go ask the people of the fisheries up in Canada how well that worked out for them. The fishery was so plentiful, they said you could almost walk across the water, the fish were so plentiful, and it had been so for 300 years, the government took control of it and ruined it in only 20.
Yep, that's the tragedy of the commons. So not only is it cherry-picking, blaming farmers for the water shortage when your precious but useless environmental regulations use even more of it, will definitely get you named this week's biggest bogon emitter. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government sensors. It's essential in this day and age. So go to vpn.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world. And they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pagosity.tv. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's libertyclassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. And now let's rain down brimstone on this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
We just had another Earth Day this past week. Do you have that in Canada, Tim?
Yeah, it gets a passing mention, but I didn't see any big events related to it or anything.
Well, as usual, down here south of the border, lots of myths and pseudoscience, together with fear-mongering, stand out, with little room left for rationalist and scientific fact. This week, our title goes to a whole bunch of Earth Day environmentalists, so many that I'm not even going to try to count them, let alone name them. So Earth Day, like pretty much any environmentalist event, is full of doomsaying. They may not be wearing sandwich boards that say the end is nigh, but they predict all the doom and gloom of Shakespeare's greatest soothsayers. But how many times have these predictions failed and failed and failed again? The American Enterprise Institute compiled a list of 18 predictions since the first Earth Day in 1970, and their track record is not great.
We're all still here, after all.
Yeah. So they start off with Harvard biologist George Wald, quote, "Civilization will end within 15 or 30 years unless immediate action is taken against problems facing mankind." Well, we should all be so glad, I guess, the government swooped in the last minute and saved us.
That still makes them wrong, though.
Then we have Washington University biologist Barry Commoner in the journal Environment, quote, "We are in an environmental crisis which threatens the survival of this nation and of the world as a suitable place of human habitation."
Again?
Then you have the New York Times editorial page, quote, "Man must stop," and this was the day after the first Earth Day in 1970, quote, "Man must stop pollution and conserve his resources, not merely to enhance existence, but to save the race from intolerable deterioration and possible extinction."
Well, just ask yourself, would you rather live today or in the 70s when this prediction was made?
Then we have Paul Ehrlich in the April 1970 Mademoiselle, quote, "Population will inevitably and completely outstrip whatever small increases in food supplies we make." Ironically, he made this claim the same year Norman Borlaug won the Nobel Peace Prize for saving a billion lives by feeding them. Quote, "The death rate will increase until at least 100 to 200 million people per year will be starving to death during the next 10 years.
And now here we are at 7 billion people in the world, and it's still not the case. And the only people who are starving are not because of overpopulation, but because of technological limitations.
Well, and oppressive governments in third world countries.
Yeah.
But even then, I think it's an all-time low. I couldn't find a good figure, but most of the figures I did came up with somewhere around 20 million people a year starving to death worldwide, which is an order of magnitude lower than his prediction.
Yeah.
By 1980, and here it is, 2015.
Heck, in some countries like India and China, things are actually getting better because their governments are backing off.
Oh, yeah. Ehrlich again in a 1969 essay, quote, "Most of the people who are going to die in the greatest cataclysm in the history of man have already been born. By 1975, some experts feel that food shortages will have escalated the present level of world hunger and starvation into famines of unbelievable proportions. Other experts, more optimistic, think the ultimate food population collision will not occur until the decade of the 1980s.
Well, if at first one prediction proves wrong, predict again.
Yep. You just keep pushing out the date. You know, just like those end-of-the-world religious predictions. Then we have Ehrlich again in the Progressive 1970 Earth Day issue. "Between 1980 and 1989, some 4 billion people, including 65 million Americans, will perish in the Great Die-Off."
Third time wasn't a charm for him.
Then we have Dennis Hayes, the chief organizer for Earth Day, quote, "It is already too late to avoid mass starvation."
Norman Borlaug says hi.
Then there's Peter Gunter, North Texas State University professor in 1970, quote, "Demographers agree almost unanimously on the following grim timetable. By 1975, widespread famines will begin in India. These will spread by 1990 to include all of India, Pakistan, China, and the Near East, Africa. By the year 2000, or conceivably sooner, South and Central America will exist under famine conditions. By the year 2000, 30 years from now, the entire world, with the exception of Western Europe, North America, and Australia, will be in famine."
Well, I'm in Canada, and I feel fine.
Oh, that's true. He did exclude Canada there, didn't he?
Well
no, North America.
Yeah.
Okay, Canada's in North America. I'm sorry, I was government school educated. It took me a second there. All right, the January 1970 edition of Life magazine, quote, "Scientists have solid experimental and theoretical evidence to support the following predictions. In a decade, urban dwellers will have to wear gas masks to survive air pollution. By 1985, air pollution will have reduced the amount of sunlight reaching Earth by one half."
And yet, ever looked at those old pictures of some of the big cities in the U.S.? They had that haze over them.
Yeah.
Look at those pictures now. They're not there anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Because the technology is better. There's always this... It's when a country's developing, first it goes through that phase where it's really dirty because the technology is still crude.
Yep.
And now it gets better. It's the high... Pollution doesn't proportionally increase with the amount of technology, people. There's just a hump to get over.
Then you have ecologist Kenneth Watt, quote, At the present rate of nitrogen buildup, it's only a matter of time before light will be filtered out of the atmosphere and none of our land will be usable. Well, I guess he didn't actually give a date there, so he can kind of weasel out of that one. If you're nice and non-specific with your end-of-the-world predictions, you can just keep it going.
Yeah, eventually the sun's going to burn out, and yes, none of the land will be usable, but that's 5 billion years. I'm not too worried.
Yeah. Oh, here's Barry Commoner again, quote, "Decaying organic pollutants would use up all the oxygen in America's rivers, causing freshwater fish to suffocate."
God.
Maybe that's what really happened to the fish there in Canada.
Yeah, of course.
Couldn't be government's fault.
Oh, yeah.
What's the matter with you? Paul Ehrlich again, in 1970, quote, he's a bunch of these. He's like 7 or 8 of them, I think. Quote, "Air pollution is certainly going to take hundreds of thousands of lives in the next few years alone." And he mentioned that 200,000 Americans would die in 1973 during smog disasters in New York and Los Angeles. Then Ehrlich again in the May 1970 issue of Audubon.
God. This guy's like the anti-Flying Dutchman.
He's giving Paul Krugman a run for his money with failed predictions here. DDT and chlorinated hydrocarbons, quote, "may have substantially reduced the life expectancy of people born since 1945. And he said that people born since 1946 now had a life expectancy of only 49 years. And if current patterns continue, this expectancy would reach 42 years by 1980 when it might level out.
Well, you did shorten the life expectancy of the people who died needlessly to malaria. So I guess that's something.
Ecologist Kenneth Watt, quote, "By the year 2000, if present trends continue, we will be using up crude oil at such a rate that there won't be any more crude oil. You'll drive up to the pump and say, 'Fill her up, buddy.' And he'll say, 'I am very sorry, there isn't any.'"
Well, that did happen, but that was because of government restrictions.
Yeah. Nixon's price controls. Was there anything like that up in Canada during that time?
I don't think so. Maybe there may have been an effect, but no, I don't care about any like cars lining up for it.
Yeah, I remember the energy crisis and all the big deal everyone was making out of that. And of course, it was all the market's fault and we needed government to save us from it. All right, Harrison Brown of the National Academy of Sciences said that humanity would run out of copper shortly before 2000, lead, zinc, tin, gold, and silver would be gone before 1990.
Because, you know, you can't reforge metal or anything. That's not possible.
I'm wondering, these are all chemical elements. How do you run out of chemical elements? Unless you put them in a nuclear reactor or something. Lead is always going to be lead. Zinc is always going to be zinc. So how do you... And the only way I know of to destroy gold is by a chemical process that only exists in science labs, which is 100% reversible.
Yeah, gold and silver don't even rust. What are these people thinking?
Well, silver does oxidize.
Yeah.
But that's easily reversible, too. You know, you just need some aluminum foil, warm water, and an electrolyte, you know, sodium bicarbonate, something like that. And you can,
Oh, yeah. I keep mixing that up.
Yeah.
I must be thinking of something else.
Yeah, gold doesn't oxidize. Senator Gaylord Nelson wrote, quote, "Dr. S. Dillon Ripley, Secretary of the Smithsonian Institute, believes that in 25 years, somewhere between 75 and 80% of all of the species of living animals will be extinct."
Yeah, newsflash to you people. 90% of all the species that ever existed on Earth already are extinct, and it had nothing to do with us.
Yeah. But I think he meant 75 and 80% of the species alive at the time.
Yeah, it's just to bring up the fact that species go extinct all the time. There's a multitude of causes. You can't just say, man done it every single time. It's ridiculous.
Right. Oh boy, Paul Ehrlich again.
Oh my
Quote,
God.
Quote, "Since more than 9/10 of the," and this is in 1975, "since more than 9/10 of the original tropical rainforests will be removed in most areas within the next 30 years or so, it is expected that half of the organisms in these areas will vanish with it."
Now, it is true that rainforests have had issues, but unlike what these people try to put forward, that's not because some evil company's tearing them down. It's because of poverty. People are trying to make farmland. The solution to that is to get these countries richer, not to impose all this nonsense that they're most assuredly wanting to.
Well, and also they're quote-unquote publicly owned, so you get the tragedy of the commons again.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, Kenneth Watt, quote, The world has been chilling sharply for about 20 years. If present trends continue, the world will be about 4 degrees colder for the global mean temperature in 1990, but 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. This is about twice what it would take to put us into an ice age. Now, the thing is, they already had the theory of global warming then. I mean, it wasn't settled science at the time. But, I mean, anyone appraised of the science would know that there were these two conflicting ideas, the global ice age and the global warming. If you just pay attention to the science around you.
And notice he doesn't say that it's our fault somehow. It's just it's happening. Well, yeah, it does happen.
Yeah.
And heck, we survived one ice age when we had way less technology than we do now, so...
Coming out of that ice age brought us the agricultural revolution.
Exactly.
There was all this fertile land that all the ice had retreated from.
I've said often before, a green, healthy lifestyle should save you money, not cost it. Anyone who's proposing environmental solutions that involve government or reducing the quality of your own life is selling you snake oil.
Yeah, sometimes it's amazing just how wrong people can be, to the point where your only response can be to name all of them this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
Well, that wraps up this We Should Not Be Losing to Grasshoppers, People edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Tim Dyson for returning.
Thank you very much, folks, and I look forward to debunking more bogosity with all of you.
Until next time, here's a quote from Steven Schneider. We have to offer up scary scenarios, make simplified dramatic statements, and make little mention of any doubts we may have. Each of us has to decide what the right balance is between being effective and being honest. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again. I don't understand how some websites post like 5 or 6 articles on one page, and other websites divide up even a small article into 3 or 4 pages, so you have to navigate around to read them.
I don't know.
What about that quote, huh?
That's awesome.
I normally don't do the quotes from people I disagree with, but just having someone like that just come out and say it as plainly as that.
I missed the name. Who was that?
Steven Schneider. Yeah, I went around looking for quotes because I know there were a lot of good quotes on the environment from people like Thomas Sowell and a few others, but I always go to WikiQuote because they're good about vetting the quotes and making sure they're good and giving you the source and everything. But I went through this list of quotes, and they are all completely pro-environment, pro-government quotes. I mean, just absolutely nothing from the other side, so I was just about to give up and go look on another site to get it, and I ran across this Steven Schneider quote from the October 1989 Discover magazine. And I was like, okay, that's perfect. I'm using that one. But I mean, just to give you an idea, here's the first quote on that page from Shai Agassi. Quote, The one factor that you can't find on a spreadsheet is the willingness of the people in government to lead change. I mean, just all this state worship.